And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Happy drop day.
Happy drop day. Happy Tuesday.
Happy Tuesday or whatever other day of the week that you were listening to this on that ends in Y.
Yeah. Ooh.
Thanks.
You're getting them all in there.
All of them.
And that's on inclusivity.
Yeah.
Equity and diversity, baby.
Can't get anything past me, bitch. Welcome back.
Hey, welcome to your favorite True Crime podcast. Aw.
You guys, that's so sweet.
How are you doing? How is your weird coworker? How are you? How was your Mother's Day? Well, that was 2 weeks ago. How is your almost Memorial Day weekend?
How is your, is it getting warmer where you live time?
Buddy the Elf, what's your favorite color? You know, I guess. Yeah, I don't know. Life here is pretty chill. It's nice that it's finally staying light later.
We love it. We're now fully accustomed to our life post-vacation, which is womp womp.
A big resounding womp womp. It is not fun. It is so much less beach and sunshine and butterbeer. And like, honestly, what a fucking bummer.
It's actually 100%.
What a fucking bummer.
100% less butterbeer. Not so much. 100% less. And that hurts, you know?
You don't have to make me cry now, okay?
In the heart.
I know. My heart is like, are we going back yet? Is it time yet?
And we're like,
is it time?
No, sweetie.
And I'm like, oh, honey. Oh, sweetheart. It's going to be a hot minute.
And that was the last trip that okay. I don't know if you guys are like this too, but like, I need something to look forward to. Like, I need to have something I'm going to do or go to or whatever. And it can be the tiniest of things. It can be doesn't need to be this big, elaborate plan or anything like that. But I just, something that gets you out of the rut of the day to day.
You need something to look forward to.
Exactly. And I had that with this trip. And now that it's over, and now I'm like, what do I mean, okay, obviously I'm getting married.
Yeah.
I'm not upset about that. Don't get me wrong. But there's so much more to do before I can get married that like I can't look forward to it yet because I have so much work to do on it that I'm like, where is my quick like
de-stress
serotonin chillax jump that isn't gonna make me rip my hair out first?
Yes,
because the wedding's going to be, I don't doubt it, amazing, but I've got a lot to do before I get there.
Well, and weddings are weird because it's the only time that you throw a party where you're not, maybe not the only time, but certainly one of the very few where you are both throwing the party and the guest of honor. So you have to like figure out this weird in between mix of like, here is everything I've planned for it, but it's all what I want, which is a weird thing for people that are anxious and people pleasers anyway.
Yeah, which I'm like, oh my God, just hit me with your car if you have to, please. Like, it's not a bother at all.
And if you don't like it, don't worry. You can just like back up, bump, 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 bump. I'll be fine.
Try it again if you need to. Yeah. I'm here for you, babe. And like,
you know, if you need me to put like a little more oomph in it in my performance or whatever, just honk. It's okay.
Just let me know.
Please don't call the police, though. They really don't need to spend their resources on me.
Correct. So, no, seriously.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'll walk. It's fine.
I'm okay. The hospital's like 30 miles away. I got this.
But
like,
you know, I need the steps anyway. My watch has been telling me all day. So really, these dogs haven't barked in a while. So it's time, you know.
That's not true. Your dogs were wailing.
They
were. A few weeks ago. But
they were. But
yeah,
it is this weird thing because I'm not a center of the tension kind of gal. Center of the tension, I said. That's how much I don't like being the center of attention.
For you, it is really a center of tension.
It is. It really is. I don't. It's not my comfort zone. It's not my. I think some people just do great and they love it. And I think that on a smaller scale, I can like I can have fun with that. But on a grander one, like more than 10 people, I'm like, oh, that's intimidating. So it's all people that I love and people that love me, and that makes my heart very full that I'm lucky enough to have those people in my life.
Yeah.
But I'm also just like, I want everybody to have fun. You don't even pay attention. You don't even have to look at this. It's totally fine if not.
Ceremony optional. Just come for the reception.
I really just want you to have fun and pick the songs that you like and get to dance to them.
Yeah.
So that's the boat that I am in. So that's a little bit about what's going on here.
Well,
what's going on with you guys?
Are you super stoked the same way that we are for all of the true crime news coming out? Do you follow Gypsy Rose on Instagram? We do. And we hear lots about her. Do you?
I don't necessarily look at all of the Gypsy posts, but I certainly see a lot of the ones that people make.
Yeah.
And there was this really awful one of this girl. I think I sent it to you. No. But it was a recent interview with Gypsy. And she's got like the blonde hair. I don't know if you guys are listening to this in like years from now, which is a weird concept. Like, this is the era of Gypsy we're talking. Okay. Mm-hmm. Hot girl summer. Not going to hold me down. That fire D. You know, we're doing all that.
Yeah, we are. Oh, we are.
She was talking about how being in prison, like, there was a whole language with her generation that she missed out on.
Yeah, that's
all
true.
All the buzzwords that people use and like that. That's very... It seems very generation specific. Like, you're not really hearing anybody your grandparents' age being like, ooh, slay. But she used that as a example. And she's like, I had never heard of slay before. And this girl was like, she was like, really? You haven't slayed before?
Oh, no.
I know.
Oh, no.
So it's just things like, I'm like, oh, wow. But you know what? Like, I hope that she can do good. And
yeah, if she can, amazing.
And be an advocate for kids who don't have a voice in the things that she experienced, because that is horrific. But I think also having that large of a presence and putting every part of your life out there, you open yourself up to exactly that. Like, I think she's almost got to be so filtered in what she says, because the fact that she said slay just took off.
Yeah, and you know what? I have a lot of feelings on it.
I know.
But what I will say is I'm happy that she is getting to live, laugh, love her way through all of the 2010s, most of the early 2000s.
Yeah.
And hopefully, you know, she will slay another day, and she will never slay another day. So,
oh God,
we can only hope. And also, I am so every time I hear something new about Gypsy Rose, I prepare myself for what I call the new girl reaction, which is like, every now and then you talk about secondhand embarrassment, like you get embarrassed for other people. And with new girl, I think I am a little too much like Jess sometimes. Like, I think if I had to describe myself with three characters from fictional shows, it would be Jessica Day.
You have this ready.
Oh, I do. Leslie Knope, and also Alexis from Schitt's Creek.
Yep.
And it's like, if the three of them had a love child, it would be me. And
it's an Apple Dabbleson.
Hello.
So cute.
Mm-hmm. And every time I hear, like, every time I see New Girl and Jess does something bad, or not bad, but like embarrassing, I'm like, oh, don't stop. Ow. Like, that's my ego. Stop. Ow. And it's not quite that same, like, I feel personally embarrassed for the secondhand embarrassment.
But you see it going on over there and you're like, oh, I want to look away. I can't, but I want to.
And I prepare. I'm like, how big is the cringe?
Like,
today?
I'm not better for it, for having seen it, but mm-hmm. I didn't look away anyway.
Yeah. And it's not to make fun of her. It's like, half of the time it is her and whoever's interviewing her and whoever's commenting on Instagram. Like, it's...
At least we did all that.
It's a pile up.
Not everybody had everything on Snapchat.
Yeah.
Shit. Well, if you are interested in Gypsy Rose and you haven't listened to our series on it, I'm going to plug that right there.
Well, that's nice, because I am afraid to, because it was mine. But thank you.
I have to. I think it was great.
I am so fascinated by the case, because anything psych-based, I am like, give it to me.
Which
give it all to me.
A nice little Easter egg for a couple episodes in the future. But you guys are going to have to wait. Made you look. Well, sucker. Let's get into today's case. I almost said video. Let's get into today's case. We don't have a video. No videos. Don't go looking for it.
All right. Let's get into it.
So, skippers, stop skipping.
Yoo-hoo.
We give you a lot to skip. My apologies. But you know what? It's so easy to skip, you know?
Just anyway, pod's on.
Hi, hello, and welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast.
Aww. You guys.
If you like what you've heard in the past and you like what you hear today, we hope that you'll rate, review, follow, repost, tell a friend, leave a little like comment.
Yeah. Boost the socials, boost the morale, you know?
We'd love that. From the top, because if I don't say it now, you know I'll forget, some sources that I consulted were CBS News, New York Post, Law and Crime, Oxygen, episode 178 of Minds of Madness, ABC News, and many more. You'll always find our sources linked below. But let's jump into it.
Okay, I'm
going
hopping.
To remind you to please keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the podcast at all times, because this is very much a bumpy ride.
Gonna be a bumpy ride.
It's gonna be a bumpy ride. So, we're talking about Kathleen Schlosser today.
Okay.
She was born April 14th, 1952 in Mount Clemens, Michigan. Kathleen, who went by Kathy, who I'm from here on out going to call Kathy.
Awesome.
She had five siblings growing up.
Wow.
There's not a whole lot of note here. She grew up with a good, loving, supportive family around her. I'm not sure what her mom did for work, but I know that her dad was a truck driver and he worked hard. When she was in high school, she met a guy named James Crossneck. And I've heard it pronounced a couple of different ways. It's spelled, just for you visual people like me, if you need to see it, it's K-R-A-U-S-E-N-E-C-K. So I don't know if it's Crossneck or Crossneck. Okay. I'm leaning more toward Crossneck.
Yeah.
Just because that's how I heard it the most, but could easily be Kraus. Someone will surely tell me if I'm wrong. But anyway, James went by Jim. And when Kathy and Jim met in high school, they hit it off. They were good friends.
Love that.
And they stayed friends at first. He came from a good family. His dad owned a local carpet store. Mm-hmm. And I think it was literally called like Crossneck Carpet or Crossneck, whatever. It was like...
Yeah.
The only one around, so most of your classmates' families got their carpets from this place.
Yeah.
Some sources that I read said that they sort of came from different ends of town. Like, he came from this very wealthy, affluent family, and she came from more humble beginnings, but...
Different sides of the track.
That's actually exactly what the sources said, which...
Yeah.
I don't know how much I buy into that.
Okay.
But... Either way, they had a great friendship. And then they ended up both going to the same school. They went to Western Michigan University.
Aww.
There, they started dating, and then they got married after school.
That's a very cute take on high school sweethearts, where, like, you're not dating the whole time you're in high school, but you've known each other long enough to know that you know who you're dating.
In a way, they kind of grew up together.
Yeah, it's really cute.
And when they did get married, one of Kathy's cousins actually described it as a princess wedding kind of deal.
Aww.
So it was this big, fancy, elaborate wedding, which
cupcake
was very
dress.
Yes, which was very sweet. And after the wedding, they actually moved to Colorado, where Jim went to grad school and Kathy worked as an orthopedic therapist.
Wow.
And then they moved to Virginia, where Jim worked as a professor in a college. And then lastly, they then found themselves in Brighton, New York. Brighton is a suburb outside of Rochester, New York.
Yeah.
You've definitely heard of Rochester. I guess they ended up moving there because Jim had gotten a job out there as an economist for Kodak, like the printing camera.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
And it's like a game back then. And so the family settled in a pretty affluent neighborhood in Brighton.
Nice.
From all accounts, from the outside looking in, they really seemed to be the all-American couple. They were young and in love. Beautiful. They were active together. They worked hard. They were educated. They kept close with family. They had lots of friends. It seemed to be this incredible and very strong marriage, made even better and stronger yet by the addition of their little baby girl that they welcomed in 1978 that they named Sarah.
Aww.
So, you know, they're young parents. They're working hard. They're doing well. They're trying their best. Once they were settled in New York, though, the company that Jim worked for ran a background check on him.
Okay.
Which always is kind of odd to me, even though it is common. It's like they always kind of let you start work and then they do the background check and then they sort of decide afterwards if what they found is
a deal breaker.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But either way, in this background check, they found out that he had lied on his application.
Oh, no.
Which was saying that he had his PhD, but he, in fact, had dropped out of the PhD program and did not have that degree.
Got it.
And this was in, like, a day or two of what we're about to talk about, which may or may not be important.
Okay.
So we're going to fast forward to February 19th, 1982.
Okay.
So Sarah is 3 years old. They are in their late 20s, early 30s, living the American dream.
Sure are.
When Jim returned home from work just before 5 p.m., as he usually did, that was normally his sort of work schedule. But immediately he felt like something was wrong.
Okay.
Their garage door had been left open and he noticed some broken glass. There was also like this axe looking thing. It's called a maul, which I don't know if this sounds stupid, but I had not heard that before, so I had to look it up.
No, I don't know.
But it's like an axe-looking thing, or it's pretty much just like a small axe. Anyway, when he went inside, he was like, well, that was weird. I wasn't expecting. That was not on my bingo card today. I did not think my garage door would be left open, and I did not think I'd find glass, so that is odd. And when he went inside, he found various items scattered around the home, and he ran to their bedroom. Because right. It was kind of eerily quiet in the house, and he kind of expected his wife, Kathy, to have been up breathing and at him.
And also, you have a three-year-old who's, I don't know about you, but every three-year-old I know is insane.
Yes. So so when he opened the door to the bedroom, he found his 29-year-old wife, Kathy, dead in their bed.
Oh.
She had been struck in the head with an axe. And the axe was still embedded in her skull.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So Kathy had been struck while she was sleeping. So other than the axe in her head, she appeared as she was sleeping. It was how she slept. It did not seem like she woke up in a panic.
Okay.
She was struck while she was asleep.
Remained asleep and died.
Correct.
That's out... I hate to say an ideal way in this scenario, but I'd rather her have less pain than more.
Of course. But what scared Jim was, oh my God, that my wife is dead. Where's my daughter?
Yeah.
So he searches the house and he ended up finding her. Luckily, she was unharmed.
Oh, good.
But Sarah had seemingly dressed herself. She was wearing like two different sweaters that were on backward. Aww. Like she had tried to maintain the routine for the day but had not done it well because she didn't have her mom's help.
She's also three.
So because it looked like she had dressed herself, they assumed that probably the entire day she spent it alone.
Right.
Jim scooped up Sarah and ran to a neighbor's house to call for help. I'm not sure exactly why he didn't call from his house, but I can imagine wanting to be out of that house immediately as well.
Get the fuck out of there if it was me personally.
The neighbor recalls that Jim was in shock.
Yeah.
Just could barely had words, could hardly get anything out. And there are recordings of this 911 call from the neighbor who just said, I think somebody across the street's been murdered. A man is here saying that there's someone dead in his house. Like, he was not able to articulate anything. I don't know really what he had for words, but
right.
He looked terrified and he had asked her to call. Sarah had said that there was a bad man in her parents' bedroom that morning, and he had an axe in his head.
Aww.
When asked to describe him, she said he was many colors.
Aww.
In all likelihood, she saw her mom's body with the axe in her head, and maybe it was easier for her young brain to rationalize it by interpreting it as a different person.
Yeah.
Because the truth was so upsetting. She was three. And it's not to say that she couldn't have seen anything, but it isn't likely that she could provide significant, reliable details either.
No.
She's three. She's been traumatized. But she did say she saw a man with an axe in his head, which, again, they likely think was just she found her mom covered in blood and it didn't look like her.
Right.
And so it must be somebody else. He has an axe in his head.
Right.
Jim said that he had left for work that morning like he always did at 6:30. He had gone to work all day, and when he came home, this is how he found the house.
Yeah.
So of course police are there and he's explaining this and he is crying. He was very obviously in pain, but the police had a job to do.
Of course.
So they were investigating the scene and some of them were in the house kind of going over all of the details there and others were staying with him and others were with Sarah making sure that she was okay because right. this poor girl has just spent seemingly hours alone.
Right.
But the scene, it was odd from the start.
Well, I'd say, because you already said there was an axe basically outside of the home and one in Kathy's head. So I don't know about you, but I don't typically bring extras to drop and leave there.
Well, I'll raise you one there. They weren't brought there at all.
Oh.
Both of those axes actually were
from the house?
From the home.
Convenient. Okay.
This area of Brighton, New York was not one that had a lot of homicides, but their law enforcement was pretty familiar with burglaries. And while at first glance it might look like a burglary, it became very suspicious very quickly.
Well, yeah.
For example, there were items strewn about, sure. But those items were seemingly placed down, not thrown, as if someone were quickly rummaging through to steal valuables.
Okay.
For example, among some of the stuff that was found on the ground, Kathy's tea set was on the floor, but it wasn't tipped over. It was perfectly placed down. Like the teapot was upright, the cups were upright.
Okay.
When you're robbing somewhere, let me clarify. I've not robbed anywhere. I assume if I were to, that I'm not really carefully placing things down. Maybe I don't want to break it if I'm planning on taking it, but if I'm rummaging through things and I'm trying to be quick, because I don't think that you really want to spend a whole lot of time there, that you don't place things down gently, that you rummage through things. And so what it looked like to investigators was that someone had tried to make it look like somebody had rummaged through them in a hurry, but they were very delicately put down.
Well, and my initial takeaway is if it's not that, someone knows Kathy's in there sleeping and doesn't want to wake her up. And that would indicate some level of knowledge of who's in the house and what's going on.
Sure, but why not just kill her first and then you can do what you want? Why have to tiptoe if you're going to kill her anyway? If your goal is not to be detected and you kill her while she's asleep, it's not like she caught you.
Well, that's what I mean. So
it's just weird.
Either way, it's...
Unless the killer was a king at the bottle trick where you like flip it in the air and it lands right up and you clap or get excited. But you do that with all oddly shaped items, every single one of them, and don't fuck up. If that's the case, you could probably try your hand in a circus.
Also, like, I don't know, go to TikTok with that shit. They pay money.
But I don't think that's what happened here.
Yeah.
Her purse was dumped out, but nothing was taken. And that was odd. There was even cash, like $50, on a dresser.
Yeah.
That wasn't taken. It was all left out. So if the goal were to take things of value, nothing of value was taken. In fact, nothing was taken.
Right.
Investigators knew enough about burglaries to know that this wasn't one. They also found the other axe in the family home. So the one in Kathy's head was also one that was already there. No one brought it in from somewhere else.
Right.
They found a trash bag at the scene that had a footprint on it.
Okay.
And it was kind of difficult from sources to figure out exactly what this relevance was, but it seemed like items had been put in the trash bag and they assumed that this was by the killer. But there was a footprint on it.
Right.
Like they had stepped on the bag to like open it. So like you put your foot in it and like pull it up, you know, the rest of it up to open it or something, which left a footprint, but there wasn't anything taken from the home. And so this all just sort of looked very odd. Why are you loading a bag, but you didn't take the bag? It's just odd.
Yeah.
There's a dead wife and young mother, a staged looking burglary scene, and no one seen coming in or out of the house. Jim was their main suspect from the start.
Of course.
But within days of the murder, Jim packed up and moved himself and Sarah to Michigan to be near family.
Yeah, that also doesn't surprise me.
And when I say within days, I actually mean just one day. Jim cooperated the evening her body was found. And again, the next morning, he came in for an interview like they asked for. But then apparently his parents had driven in from Michigan and he went back with them that same day. He told police that he would be back that afternoon for another interview, but that time came and it went and he did not show, which was very suspicious to them because he didn't even tell them that he was leaving. And this wasn't like, I'm going to go stay with them for a little bit because, oh my, I can't stay in this house and I need to get out of here. He just packed up, moved, and did not come back. Like, I am relocating now. Again, odd and suspicious, but they didn't have any authority to make him stay. He was well within his rights to leave, and right. So he did. But they kind of expected that he would want answers.
Closure of any kind? Justice, maybe, for your and dead wife?
He agreed. He left that morning saying, I will be back this afternoon to speak more. And then he just wasn't. And when they went by the house, it was empty. Like, he had left. Like, there, wherever he had been staying, I don't know if he was allowed to be at the house, but when they tried to find him again, they found out he was already gone.
Right. It was, you walk into the empty open drawers and the empty closet kind of thing.
And then they found a pamphlet in the couple's shared vehicle that had information about marriage counseling in it, which they figured might be indicative of problems in the relationship, though possibly. A pamphlet could have like 10 different things on it. And if one of those things is marriage counseling, it's bold of you to assume that's the one, but you're looking for anything that you can. Right. When her friend saw her last about 6 months before she died, she said that Kathy hadn't seemed like herself, that she had seemed down.
Okay.
And that friend had sort of looked forward to the next time that they would get to talk, but that time didn't come because a few months later, Kathy was dead.
Right.
But she just didn't seem her usual happy self, which could be any number of reasons why, but it was something that the friend noticed immediately.
Right.
And had thought maybe next time, you know, maybe it's just kind of a bump and then there just wasn't a next time.
Right. Either it's a bump or I'm going to hear more about it.
Right. Still, the investigation continued. It was determined that Kathy's cause of death was the axe wound to her head, and it's believed that she was struck while she slept. She had no defensive wounds. There wasn't a struggle that ended in this wound. One of the more polarizing parts of this entire case is actually Kathy's time of death.
Okay.
She was killed in 1982, more than 40 years ago today. Scientific advancements of today have far surpassed what was around in the late 70s and early 80s.
Right.
DNA was in its infancy, or at least using it as a tool was. And time of death was extremely difficult to narrow down, and we'll talk about it later. It depends who you ask.
Okay.
So that was sort of a gray area initially while they're investigating. Through the 80s, while the case grew cold, they believed Jim was the killer, but they just couldn't prove it. And they didn't have a motive.
Right.
Jim went about with his life.
Okay.
And so did Sarah.
Good.
What else can you do, I guess?
Yeah, nothing.
He raised his daughter. By all reports, he was a great dad.
Good.
He married again. He divorced. Married again. Then divorced. And then married again. But this one stuck.
Oh, okay.
In 1997, he reconnected with an old friend. Her name was Sharon James, and they began dating. At this time, they both lived near Seattle. And after 2 years of dating, they got married. He told her that his first wife was murdered. But Sharon never really pushed the subject because he would become emotional when he talked about it.
Well, yeah.
So she just...
I would hope.
She just figured... That's a part of his past he doesn't want to relive that we're talking about now and moving forward. And that's what they did.
Okay. Honestly, kind of props to her, though, because my nosy ass, I'd be like, say so much more right now.
Correct. We'll fill in some of the blanks in a little bit, but I want to fast forward to April 16th, 2016.
Okay.
Jim and Sharon were spending their Saturday morning together at home, probably in their little PJs. They had been together like 20 years by this point.
Okay.
And there's a knock at the door.
Yep.
They're like, whoops, the fuck is that?
They're like, my Amazon package says it's going to be delivered tomorrow.
And I'm in my gym jams. But there were two detectives at their door. Two detectives from New York who were actually investigating the case. And they had a few questions for Jim.
Yeah, I bet they did.
At first, they were polite, cordial. They were invited in. They sat down. They were probably offered coffee. And they kind of initiated the conversation saying, "We think we're close. We need your help. Any information that you might be able to offer us would be fantastic." And so Jim's like, "Yeah, anything I can do." But the questions grew intense.
Yeah.
And this was the first time in their 20 years together that Sharon actually heard the details of Kathy's murder, his new wife hearing about his first wife's murder.
Right.
She didn't really know the circumstances of it, just that she had passed and it was hard for him to talk about. But then they just said it. They said, "We think you killed her." And he said, "I didn't." But Jim seemed nervous.
Okay.
But who wouldn't? Guilty or innocent, being accused of a brutal murder would be intimidating and
freaky. Of someone you love.
For sure. Not only was this the first time Sharon heard the details of the murder, but she'd never known he was a suspect. She didn't know that he was their only suspect, which is a blow, right?
Yeah.
She said she never asked him because she didn't have to, because she knew the answer. She knew he would never hurt anybody, that he wasn't capable of violence, let alone that extent of violence. And so she was just very trusting of him.
Okay.
And many have called her naive, and she said, "Yeah, maybe, but that's my husband."
Well, and I do think there's something to be said for, what's that old country song? "Stand by your man." Like, I get it. But also, personally would have at least asked for more information earlier on. I don't know that he knew he was a suspect.
Oh, I think he knew.
I mean,
I think he said, "Got a blast."
There's something a little suspy about bouncing same day. But also, how do you know? No. And how do you know if you're the only one? Like, there's a lot of that you can't know until someone outright is like, "Oh my God, answer the questions we are asking you. Did you do this?" Like,
so much of the suspicion in the case can be kind of brushed away in some innocent answer. "Why did you take off?" "I couldn't stand to be in the town where my wife was murdered. I needed to be near family." "Why didn't you tell us?" "My family came down to pick me up. I just packed up and left. It was within 24 hours. My mind was in a different place."
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, "I don't know what else I can tell you." Kinds of things. And so a lot of their suspicions could sort of be like you could dismiss them very easily.
Right.
With, you know,
but also
it was a lot.
In a case where it's the only suspicion, how do you brush that off?
Well, exactly. But you're probably wondering what changed, because how, after more than 30 years, could they come back and accuse him? It's been quite some time. And the answer is that they found something else.
Ooh.
Because the shoe print on the dumpster bag, they had determined it to be from a boat shoe. Because the
Sperry King. Okay.
Pretty much. Because the internet, I guess, and technology had advanced enough that the tread could be confirmed. And while they never tested the shoes or tested so much of it, because they probably just weren't able to in the early 80s, but they were able to recognize that pattern was odd.
Mm-hmm.
And when they were going back over some photos from the crime scene, there's a photo where boat shoes that belonged to Jim were right there, like captured in the photo. And they were able to say, like, "This is the same tread. This is very similar." And while they didn't have the shoes, it was like, this is enough to reopen this and look at this again, because we're talking February in New York. It had snowed within the last week.
Right.
So if someone's coming from outside, they're likely to be in boots or sneakers or something else. But a boat shoe was like a light, airy summertime shoe.
Top your foot's open.
Maybe even more of like a slipper in the house, if you will. So who's more likely to wear slippers in the house?
Oh.
So it kind of reignited this.
Not a robber? You wouldn't come in and slip in and use your stuff that you know where it all is mm-hmm. for a weapon. And
not the hand burglar.
Your slippers.
Exactly.
Well, these ones fit just right.
Everything collected in the home was tested again with this new technology that we had in the mid-2010s.
Yeah.
And what they found was, drumroll please, nothing.
Yep.
But this wasn't all that bad because the absence of DNA was still new information. Because they didn't find that it led directly to Jim, it also meant that it didn't lead to anybody else either.
Right.
And so all of these years later, we're talking about 30 years later, there was no new DNA discovered. So of course Jim's DNA was there. He lived there. It would be shocking if it wasn't. But it was also that nobody else's DNA was located either.
Right.
And it's really difficult to use something that isn't there as evidence because you can't say but because you didn't find it doesn't mean it couldn't have been.
Yeah.
But this really reiterated their point of like, the shoe matches what he wore that was in his house. We have a photo of that shoe. We have no other DNA at the scene. We have nothing else. Nobody else was seen going into that house. No one was seen leaving that house.
Right.
We saw a marriage counseling pamphlet that may have told us that they were having issues in their marriage. And just a day before or within a few days of her murder, he was caught lying about having a PhD when he didn't.
Right. And finance is a big deal. It like for anybody, that is a part of your life that you have to manage and maintain. And that is a big stressor if potentially that led to a job loss.
Or if your wife found out that you were lying about it.
Yeah.
Big deal.
Pretty big.
And then he just got to leave and go to Michigan. So it wasn't like he stuck around at that job.
Yeah.
If he even had that option, we don't know. So anyway. With all of this, they're especially looking at this DNA saying, well, it would have been really difficult for somebody to enter that home, do what they did, and not leave any DNA behind on any of the scattered items, on anything. And they didn't have anything.
Right.
So then we'll fast forward again. So what we just talked about was 2016. We're going to go to 2019. November of 2019, actually. Jim was indicted for the murder of his first wife, Kathy.
Yeah, I thought that might be the case.
He was 67 years old.
Holy poop. Okay.
Sharon, his most recent wife, stood by him, as did his daughter, Sarah. So Sarah's an adult now, obviously, even into her 40s now, and she stood by her dad.
Okay.
Sharon said that no one knew her husband better than her, that he was nothing short of an incredible husband and an incredible man. They didn't call each other by name. Instead, it was always love or honey or Pookie Bear, Schnookum, McHot Pants. Right. I made that up. I have no idea what they did. Maybe I'm exaggerating, but
honey, flour, yes, butter, sugar.
But it was said that they behaved like newlyweds and that they never fought, that he was just this very kind, very supportive, soft-spoken, humble man. And that mask, if it was one, didn't slip in over 20 years that they were together.
Right. Well, and, you know, I'm thinking she probably does know him better than anyone at this point, right? Because none of his other partners lasted half as long.
But she didn't know him 15 years before that.
And that's true. And I was sitting there and I was thinking, like, as you're describing him, this seems like the exact kind of person that would have an insane blow up if they were to blow up. Or perhaps did that and learned from their mistakes and learned how to manage that. Because I don't know about you, but I know a lot of people who struggle with anger are not people who are loud and boisterous otherwise. It's like there can be, but there's also the subsect of people where it's like you're so quiet and you're so like mild. Almost.
I don't even know if it means struggle with anger. I think people who struggle with anger as a daily part of their life have very regular blow ups and blowouts, if you will. But I think somebody who's just like lets it build and build and build right. and buries it deep and deep might not have had an anger problem, but exploded in a way because they never did have an anger problem and they never
well, that's
had
a problem in and of itself. Right, but you know? Not. Yeah, it's like the opposite of.
Like never expressed it in a way. And we don't know how he was in their first marriage. I think.
Right.
That we're talking late 70s, early 80s, and it was probably kept more behind closed doors. And
for sure.
In a way, I think that. Deviating from that as we have as a society isn't always like the most incredible thing. I think it makes it a lot easier for victims of domestic violence. Don't get me wrong. I agree that we should that part should be talked about more. But I think so little of people's private lives is really kept private. And so it could kind of go either way where maybe it was just if they were having problems, they were handling it together.
Internally, yeah.
Maybe it wasn't making their Facebook post, I guess. But maybe he lost it. Maybe he got stressed and do whatever. But if that's the case, she was sleeping. It wasn't like this was a fight gone wrong. Maybe right. they fought the night before, but it wasn't active.
Well, and that's the other thing, right? Is like I can't wrap my head around someone whose demeanor is talked about like that. Someone who has been able to make it through years of academics and work.
Mm-hmm.
Because that in and of itself is stressful and hard and frustrating at some point. And have a child, like a young child. So mm-hmm. you're through the infant no longer sleeping at all overnight phase. So it's hard to imagine you get through all of that and losing a job, if that is even what happened, would be enough to break that camel's back.
It just seems like it came out of nowhere because you can speculate marriage issues, but there was nothing concrete confirmed like,
right.
oh, this was bad. It's not like Kathy said, he hits me, but would she have in that time? Would she have felt comfortable enough to say, would she ever say that out loud if it were really happening?
Well, and the other piece of it too is like, what is in situations like in domestic violence and intimate personal violence, you tend to see fights lead up to that or someone does something wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to find a spot where you're that angry at your partner who you love so much and things are going okay and you're not in the middle of a blowout fight. And you're like, you know what? Let me just axe your head right now just while you're sleeping so peacefully.
It's hard to imagine but something like that happening.
At the same time, it's hard to imagine anybody else fitting all of the boxes of what we know with the evidence, too.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me what happened. Sorry. I needed a debrief. Okay.
Of course. That's what we're here for, babe.
Mm.
As you might have guessed, this went to trial.
Mm-hmm.
He maintained his innocence. Prosecution said, fuck that. And in 2022, the trial began.
Wow. Okay, that's pretty
recent. So we're
recent.
Talking recent.
Damn.
Prosecution was convinced. Their attorneys had no doubt whatsoever that they had the right guy. And they had an expert witness that told a very compelling version of events that was very beneficial to them. And I'm not saying that as a slight at prosecution. Defense did it too. Every attorney does it everywhere. Yeah. You're not worth your salt if you don't. But they hired a forensic I say hired. I don't know if he was paid. Let me specify. A forensic pathologist testified.
Yep.
His name was Michael, and it's either pronounced Baden or Baden. I've heard it pronounced both. I'm going to say Baden because it's B-A-D-E-N if you are a visual learner like myself. But anyway, Dr. Baden actually worked on the JFK assassination.
Damn.
Which I'd love to have a beer with this guy, but how the fuck old was he? also,
shit. Yeah.
At the same time. But anyway, he believed that Kathy's time of death must have been around 3:30 in the morning.
All right.
From the evidence and her body and all of that, which would have been when Jim was still home.
Yeah.
So if this is at 3:30 in the morning and he's saying he leaves by 6:30, he had plenty of time to be able to do that if we're agreeing with this timeline.
And it would make sense why she'd be in a deep enough sleep that a little bit of rustling around wouldn't wake her up.
Because your husband getting out of bed or going to the bathroom after years is likely not going to wake you up anymore. Somebody breaking into your home and breaking glass might.
Right. Yeah.
Just worth noting. But defense presented something entirely different. They had a few witnesses to say that the time of death was indeterminate, that it could have been as late as the afternoon.
Okay.
And we'll get more to that anyway, but they also had sort of their star point that they were making is that they pointed the blame at somebody else entirely. They were saying, not only is it not our client, and here's why, but here's who we think it is.
Damn.
Or as they would present it, here's who we know it to be.
Right.
A man named Edward Larrabee.
Ed?
Ed's a piece of shit. Ed. I'm going to put it, is he our piece of shit in this? I don't know. But no doubt the shittiest of pieces.
He's still a poop.
Of course. He did live locally, like less than a 10-minute walk local.
Okay.
And he was a monster.
Okay.
Ed Larrabee was a convicted serial rapist. He hunted women severely. Throughout his life, he was incarcerated for 32 years total, mostly for sex crimes, but a lot of other crimes as well. Like much of what we're seeing today, it was a lot of catch and release with him, unfortunately, and it went on until he committed the ultimate crime, which was murder. But he was let out time and time again. On his deathbed in 2014, he admitted to the 1991 murder of 27-year-old Stephanie Kupchinski. He had strangled her and discarded her body in a shallow stream.
Holy crap.
And before you think it, no, he did not confess because he suddenly grew compassion, established morals, or grew a remorse bone. He did it simply because it was a bargaining chip to get what he wanted, and he was dying.
Yeah.
So he didn't really have a whole lot to lose at this point.
Right.
He quite literally traded information and admitted to murdering this poor woman for sandwiches, pizza, material things that he could get that would be reasonable, I guess, to ask for. Like, it wasn't something that was going to take months for them to provide him, but it was the little pleasures and fuck it, he was dying. So he admitted to it. I guess what happened was he had been released time and time again for a lot of violent crimes, and he ended up working in an apartment building, like as part of a staff. And I believe he had keys to the apartments, and he saw Stephanie, let himself in, and murdered her. And her body was found a while later, but they didn't have answers until 2014 when he provided them. But he did provide details that confirmed, like, he knew things only the killer would know,
right,
kind of thing. So that part was true, but it did also get him access to things that he wanted, and time wasn't really on his side anymore.
Yeah.
So then he kind of realizes this, and then he admits to murdering Kathy.
Got it.
He contacted the FBI, it seems like on his own, and he said that he killed a housewife one February morning in 1982.
Well,
which certainly got their attention. And defense was using this all to say, look, we have a guy. He admitted it. How is our client on trial?
Right.
Our client, by all reports, is kind, nonviolent, a humble, giving man who would never hurt a fly, much less his wife. This other man was right there at that time in that place and was known to be a violent offender.
And admitted it.
He was interviewed at the time of the murder, actually, too, like all of those years ago, back in the 80s.
Right.
Because police knew that he should be on their radar. I mean, he was on their list of suspects, right, but he really refused to talk, and they let him.
That's interesting.
And it's interesting now because you look at reports and they're like, a lot of those officers that signed off on those, some of those like supervisors that signed off on the report saying that like it wasn't worth following up with him anymore, have since passed away, because we're talking 40 years right later, and not everybody's going to be able to
speak for that. Yeah.
Still not, and to speak to the decision making, and policies were different back then. It's a different right game, but they are saying like the defense was saying police dropped the ball on this because you didn't interview Ed Larrabee to the extent that you should have, and instead you chose to focus on our client.
Right.
But detectives say that he was a bad man. He just wasn't the bad man that murdered Kathy.
Yeah.
Because prosecution said, yeah, Ed Larrabee has reason to admit things he didn't do. He is benefiting from this. And like we saw in the Andrea Sincotta murder, there is risk when you offer an offender with nothing to lose and everything to gain to offer additional information.
Right.
When you offer them something that they can benefit from and all they have to do is lie, they don't give a shit.
No.
Who exactly do you think you're talking to?
If he doesn't care about violently assaulting women, why is he going to care about saying he did when he's A, already admitted to it before, so he has no ego problem saying that. B, already done worse than lying, because yes, you shouldn't lie and all of that, but also I would consider that to be less violating to the majority of people than like assaulting their physical being.
And for him, it's like if he admitted to Stephanie's murder and it's not like he got more time, what were they going to do? The man was dying. Like, he doesn't have any more time.
2 more years. Who cares?
Like, he doesn't give a shit.
Right.
But he knows of unsolved murders and he's like, yeah, like he grew up. I can't say he grew up there, but he lived there at the time. He recalls this case, no doubt.
Right.
He recalls what was likely in the news. He recalls being interviewed by the police. He probably also knew that nobody was arrested because in 2014 and the years following, nobody really was.
Right.
So you know that this is an unsolved case and now it's your bargaining chip because no one else has gotten canned for it. I may as well grab that.
Right.
And maybe I'll get some deep dish pizza last time because I didn't really like the thin crust.
Right. And you know what? I've been missing sausage and the pepperoni is fine.
So he took responsibility for her murder, but her case didn't fit his MO. He was a rapist. Assaulted pretty much all of the women that had been assaulted by him had been raped by him.
Right.
And that was a specialty isn't like the way to say that, but like that was what he, obviously that was his MO, but that was what he did. He
That's what got, he wanted.
He got off on humiliation. So it wasn't this just quick thing for him. It was the point of the whole thing anyway. And Kathy was not raped.
No. Also, if she died peacefully in her sleep, that fits none of the power and control dynamic that most rapists have anyway. So, like, even if this was his, I want to branch out, that doesn't fit any of what he personally is gaining from doing this to someone else.
Not only that, but he got facts of the case wrong. Larrabee said that he killed a heavyset brunette woman. Kathy was a very thin blonde. So right. Even his physical description of her was incorrect. And now, of course, we're saying, okay, this was 30 years later. What was, you know, how well could he remember? But
pretty sure he's going to remember that.
You'd think he'd remember a woman that he killed. But it just seemed very obvious that he was saying whatever it was that he could think of to benefit. Just like with Andrea Sincotta, the killer lied and said he was hired because he thought he was going to get time off.
Right.
And he was already doing life. So life and life is still life, but still he thought he could benefit from it in some way. And so he lied and another man almost went down for it.
Yeah.
So this isn't something that isn't heard of. But defense also had a forensic pathologist that believed Kathy was killed at a different time entirely. So to prosecution's witness who said, like 3:30,
3 a.m. Yeah,
this one said between 5 a.m. and 1 p.m.
It's a big difference.
And if it's not 5 a.m. and it's anytime after 6:30, then Jim's already out of the house,
right?
Which means that anybody could have come and gone into that house, even though nobody was seen. But hey, you have the broken glass, and you have this, and that. You know what I mean? You can point to all these other things. This is a lot. This is a pretty big difference,
right? Well, and you know, I know they're in an affluent spot in New York. I don't know exactly the makeup of their neighborhood, but like there are a lot of trees in the Northeast region. It's possible that you might not see somebody necessarily coming around. I guess, you know, like
it can be anything,
right?
But was it likely Ed Larrabee? No. And that's why detectives were like, we know he's an asshole.
He's just not the asshole that murdered Kathy.
But we also know that and I guess it's sort of easy to like pass blame on the people that aren't around to defend themselves, but to say, yeah, well, the cops that did that either like retired and moved away, aren't reachable, or died or whatever. So you can't really ask about the decision making on there. So we can say that we disagree whether they do or don't. It's easier to kind of pass the blame on that. But in my opinion, should it have been followed more thoroughly? Absolutely. I think everybody should have been. I don't know what resources were like in that town. And I know that they were kind of over their heads with the homicide.
Right.
But Ed Larrabee didn't really fit it.
Right.
He had every opportunity, but none of the evidence there said that this points to him.
Well, and it's the same with motive, because if he's not going to do the things that he does for pleasure and power in the other cases that he's offended in, what is the motive there?
Exactly. You just can't get to an answer with it.
Right.
So Sharon, Jim's wife, Sarah, Jim's daughter, and most of Kathy's family were on Jim's side.
Wow.
Kathy's own family stood by Jim, right until they didn't.
Oh.
Her dad was just heartbroken. By the time of Jim's trial, Kathy's dad was 95 years old.
Holy hell.
He'd already buried his wife. He'd already buried his son. The man knew loss that I would not wish on anybody. He had lost his wife, son, and daughter. I'm pretty sure he was the only one left. He had like a niece.
Holy hell.
Or something that had attended things with him, who was at least, maybe more were there, but who was as vocal as he was, because this man was vocal.
Mm-hmm.
His name was Bob, and Bob said that he never knew of any issues in his daughter's marriage, meaning Kathy and Jim's. And that he had stood by Jim for years. But he just felt that this evidence piled against him.
Well, sure.
He said after Kathy's death, Jim wouldn't let their family see Sarah. So Sarah didn't have a whole lot of closeness or contact with any of Kathy's relatives.
That's so hard.
It was mostly Jim and Jim's side of the family. It was very kept on that. And so for Kathy's family, for the... you know, the maternal side, they lost Kathy, but then they also kind of lost Sarah too. Not in that she was dead, but that she wasn't really reachable, that they didn't get right. to watch her grow up in the ways that they had anticipated, that they were kind of kept out of her life in a way that they didn't really understand why.
Well, especially too, because I know it's a fine line to walk, and again, we always talk about like not judging how someone grieves, because I could understand where being around your late wife's family could be really challenging and painful, because right. these are the people that remind you of her. They feel like her, they seem like her, but in the same breath, these are the people that remind you of her.
And shouldn't you want that? And also,
and especially for your kid,
yeah, don't you want your daughter to grow up with the family that helped make her mom who she was, and to keep that alive? And so that's what I mean, where there's like different ways like that you can dismiss things, because it's like, on one hand, that's very suspicious that you swept your kid away mm-hmm. from any of the family that might either suspect you or remind you of her mom or anything like that. But at the same time, you can see if he was like, well, it was really painful and I just wasn't in a place where I could do that, and I let Sarah know that she could call them if she wanted to, but I wasn't making a trip out, I just couldn't, you know. I don't know that right. he said that,
well,
but
yeah, no,
it would
I
be so
you.
Easy for him to be able to sort of just kind of poke holes in all of these things where like it looks suspicious, but so much of it can be explained away because it's just personal.
Right.
So ultimately, I feel awful because they all loved Kathy so much, or at least seemingly everybody loved Kathy so much. They all wanted justice, but they couldn't disagree more on the facts.
Right.
Because Sarah wholeheartedly believed her dad.
Yeah.
And Kathy's dad wholeheartedly believed that Sarah's dad was the killer.
Right.
Right? So it's like grandfather against granddaughter in a way, which is just awful because everybody wants the truth and everybody believes what they believe in for good reasons. And it's just awful. And this trial included faded memories trying to recall events from 40 years ago. Some of the witnesses had passed away. Family members had grown up, grown old, changed their minds. And then there's the glaring inconsistency among expert witnesses where they couldn't even agree on a time of death.
Right.
It was so long ago, they weren't able to do it. So much didn't make sense. It was staged to look like a burglary, but they said it looked like someone trying to stage a burglary. Like not someone, like a burglar, someone who didn't know what a burglary looked like said, this must be what a burglary looks like. Was it on your bingo card that I was going to say burglary so many times? I'm going to get it wrong if I keep saying it. But anyway, there seemed to be no motive. We've got the issue with time, with like even who would have time to do this? Who would have seen that? How long was Sarah left alone? Who did Sarah see? Did Sarah see anybody?
Right.
And now you're asking this woman who's now in her 40s, what did you see when you were three? And how many times have you had to talk about it? And there's very real ways that you can create memories.
Yeah.
Like false memories. That's not okay. There was cash left out on the dresser and valuables left behind that if this were a burglary,
doesn't
likely
make
wouldn't
sense.
Have happened. So much of this doesn't add up. So there's just so many different things where it's like you try to unpack any bit of it and you end up with more questions than answers.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like that meme of the woman trying to do science.
Yeah, with all the math equations. Exactly.
Huh?
The jury had reached a verdict. And some reports say that before it was read, Kathy's sister, Annette, so Sarah's aunt, went to Sarah and said, I love you more than you'll ever know. And Sarah responded by saying, thank you.
Okay.
So these two women had been estranged.
Yeah, of
because
course.
Sarah defended her dad and Annette believed that Jim was the killer. And so they didn't have much of a relationship. And it wasn't like when Sarah was growing up, they were awfully close.
Yeah, there's no foundation to build on.
But if you're Annette and you believe this, Sarah is all that you have left of Kathy. Sarah is her legacy.
Regardless of whether or not they believe he did that, that's true.
But to disagree so significant, like on not right. just some of the facts, but I mean, who did it? Who you like? You're defending
and
who?
Dad.
If you're the any one of Kathy's family, how awful to feel like Kathy's legacy chose the killer over yeah. her, you know, like all yeah. of these weird emotions that I think unless you put yourself in their positions, which we always try to do in this podcast, what an awful, confusing, I mean, you'd be angry, you would be sad, you'd want to yell at the world. What do you yeah. do? You just want the answers. You just want Kathy to tell you. You just ask for some way for her to tell you who did this because I need to put this to rest.
Right. And we thought we were done and here we are. I mean, not done. It's not like anything was decided, but we thought this was cold and dead.
But we at least, for so many of the family, thought it couldn't have been Jim. It must have been a stranger. And it's scary to think that the killer's still out there. But at the same time, you were like, well, I'm so glad that Sarah has her dad.
Right.
And then if at any point, whether you believed that at all or you slowly changed into believing, wait a minute, I don't necessarily think Jim's all that innocent now. And if you don't think that, then you know that he has been the one that has raised Sarah. And the grandfather has accused Jim of essentially brainwashing Sarah into trusting him, believing him, and not acknowledging all the facts that lead it to him.
Right.
Ultimately, the verdict was read.
Yeah, what was it?
Guilty.
Wild. Okay.
Bob said it took 40 years, but they got their justice. That's Kathy's dad.
Wow.
Sharon cried, Jim's
yeah,
wife.
Of course.
Begged to hug her husband, but she was denied.
Aww.
During sentencing, Sarah addressed the court and said, I've been blessed with the most extraordinary parents. Sadly, they have both been taken from my life. My mother's killer got away with her murder, and my father's life has been taken by a failed justice system that's convicted him of a crime he did not commit.
Wow. Heavy words, babe.
But Kathy's dad said, Jim, I hope you live to be 100 years old and you enjoy your new home. as a 95-year-old man saying, I hope you make it longer than me, you son of a bitch.
Because
he so badly believed that Jim was the killer. Jim said, to this day, it's still very difficult for me to talk about the circumstances that surrounded her death. All I see is Kathy with an axe in her head and Sarah standing in the hallway, disheveled, with an empty and distant look on her face. I did not murder Kathy. I loved Kathy with all of my heart and with all of my soul.
Wild.
Ultimately, during sentencing, Jim, who was 71 years old at this time, was sentenced to 25 to life.
Wow.
At this point, Sharon had said that she would stand by him, that she did not believe this was forever, it was a mistake.
Okay.
And it would be fixed, that this was, I mean, certainly not something they were going to laugh about later, but that this was a temporary thing because they were going to
be appealed and
yes,
corrected.
They would appeal this. After sentencing, Annette, Kathy's sister, said, may my family finally be able to heal.
Wow.
This has affected us for 40 years, though we've been dealing with the pain and anguish over this man, and we saw him walk away in handcuffs today, and that's what we wanted.
Wow.
Bob, again 95 years old, said that there's one thing he wants to do before he dies. He wants his daughter's remains moved.
Okay.
Because Kathy is actually buried in Jim's family plot. And Bob believes that she should be at rest next to her mom and her brother.
Aww.
Not with her killer and her killer's family.
Yeah.
But in order to do that, Bob needs Sarah to agree, and he's afraid that she never will.
Wow.
And the last update I saw was in 2023. I haven't seen anything about Bob passing away, so if he is still with us,
hey,
he is
King.
Likely like 96 or 97. I'm not sure. I kind of wanted to let him be for the end here, so I didn't really dig into him. But as far as I can see, Kathy's body has not been exhumed and moved.
Wow.
Jim immediately began appealing his conviction, as you'd expect. I mean, even if he were like, fuck it, I'm guilty, he would probably still try to appeal on some kind of technicality. All you got is time in there, so you may as well. And they do. But unfortunately, he actually died 6 months later after sentencing of esophageal cancer.
Wow.
And this was news to me. And I think I read this correctly, or at least interpreted it correctly, but under New York law, if you die during the appeal process, it actually vacates the conviction.
Oh, interesting, because I guess you can't prove.
Because you didn't get a chance to prove. You didn't get a chance to follow the appeal through, and so they pretty much like give you the benefit of that. So it has since kind of been like dropped. But Sarah and Sharon were like fighting to get everything removed from him because they didn't want his name to be tarnished with the murder of a woman they claim he did not kill.
Right.
And that is where that stays.
That's wild.
And this one got me because I can see multiple sides, and I always say I'd love to get picked for jury duty because I'm a nerd, and even if it's like traffic court, I'm like, give me it. Like, I want to know.
Let me in on those courtside seats.
I would have a really difficult time with this case.
I would have to say not guilty. And honestly, not because I believe it. Genuinely, like, I'm an Occam's razor girly. I find the simplest solution is typically the right one when everything, and I do mean everything, fits.
And he makes the most sense.
But. If in this country the standard is beyond a reasonable doubt, I have reasonable doubts. I know that I get very caught up on the specifics and sort of ideology of a lot of this, but I think that that is because if we forget the specifics and the ideology of a lot of our systems and a lot of the foundation that this country was built on, constitutional rights, your civil rights, like all of these things, I would rather see a man who, in all likelihood, probably murdered his wife, walk free with people that who know him now so staunchly believe that this could not be the case, versus have people that are not guilty waste away in these institutions. And because I have a reasonable doubt, I would not feel comfortable sentencing this man to presumably spend the rest of his life incarcerated. And, you know, I mean, if Bob is right and he lives to 100, I guess there's a chance that he might have 4 years on the outside. If he gets the very first parole opportunity and they, you know, if that had happened,
but he's dead anyway,
but he's dead. And I guess in terms of a really shitty situation, in terms of the trial being 40 years later with tarnished DNA, rough evidence, old standards and practices,
witnesses being expected to remember. I don't remember. If you asked me something about a month ago, I'm like, fuck it. When? What?
Huh?
What?
Who was she?
You asked me to write the date. I'm going to have to check my phone. Like, are you kidding me?
I don't even know what time it is.
You want me to remember something 40 years ago?
Hell no. So, like,
I mean, it doesn't help that I wasn't born yet, but damn, it wouldn't matter if I was. I would not remember that.
No. I can't remember what happened 15 years ago. And I have memories, at least from that. Like,
I know.
But I think part of it is it's shitty because either way, there's not real closure. But it's beneficial because both sides kind of won. You know, Kathy's family got a conviction and Sarah and Sharon got to see it vacated.
That's one way to look at it.
And it's not that I am happy about any of it. It's all really shitty. But
yeah, no, I mean, it's, I guess it is something. It's just,
it's a head scratcher. Like,
I went round and round in my research and everything. And, you know, there are some, like, if you take something that was all Sharon, mm-hmm. you know, of course he's incredible. He's amazing. Show stopping, fucking sit on it, shit on it, love it. You know, yeah. all that stuff that it's just, you know, he's incredible. And, we should kiss the ground he walks on, and she was very in love with him, and that's all well and fine. But that tells one version.
Yeah.
And then there's the prosecutor's version where they were like, there was not a doubt in my mind for a split second that it wasn't him. And then I think there's the rest of us where we float in that gray area where we can see both sides, because I do.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't envy being on that jury. I think I'm 85% confident that he did it. I don't know if that 15% counts as reasonable doubt, but I do think that it doesn't make sense for anybody else to have done it. It doesn't really make sense that he took off after that, though you can mm-hmm. explain it away if you want to. The shoe print being what it was, and of course they didn't like have the shoes, test the shoes and be able to confirm the tread, but it was a boat shoe and they could confirm that, and they could confirm that he had boat shoes in the house from the photos.
Yeah.
That we're talking about DNA that wasn't found, and it's really difficult to use something that wasn't there as evidence rather than something that was there as evidence.
Absolutely.
That's a whole mind fuck to kind of unpack, I guess. That I can go round and round and then around again, because it doesn't make a lot of sense. And Ed Larrabee, to me, sounds great on paper. Yep, with it, he was like a 4-minute walk away. He was a violent offender. This is a violent crime. You want to like seal that? Oh, and he admitted it. That's the cherry on top. Cool. Send great. It.
Easy. Put it in.
But that is only at surface level, because what he supposedly recalled from it never happened.
Right.
And he had something to gain. But the thing is most killers or most offenders who have information that you want aren't willing to say it unless there is something to gain. So it's not like you're going to have this like neutral space where
he's all not things gonna being eat, equal. Pray, love his way into a confession he doesn't need to make.
Correct. Like he's going to, if there's no reason to play those cards, he's not playing those cards.
Right.
He found a benefit. He was running out of time where this was what he could get, and he'd probably admit to assassinating JFK.
Right.
If he thought it could get him an extra sandwich. I mean, this was the point in time that we're talking about for this man that I discredit what he said. And again, I'll say it again. Andrea Sincotta was a perfect example of why taking the word of an offender with something
risky.
With something to gain and nothing to lose is a gamble, and you can't just accept that without verifying. And it seemed like they took it and ran with it. And they're like, we don't need, he admitted it. Like, what else do you need? He said, I did it. It's really hard to get someone to confess. We're going to run with that. And I think that he was a nice distraction, but I almost think he was damaging to defense's case. Cause it's like, well, I fucking don't think it's him. And if we're saying it's not him or it's this guy, I'm going with Jim.
Right. Well, and I think for me, like, my reasonable doubt is, where is the motive? What is the motive? Because if Jim does have a master's degree, it's not like the workforce is suddenly dead to him because he's not in this PhD spot anymore. Even if that happened, like, we don't know. So I'm thinking worst case scenario, it's still not bad enough that it would be like, oh, I can't tell her that we're having, like, you know, that this happened or whatever. But also,
maybe he didn't want a divorce. Maybe he didn't want to pay alimony. Maybe he didn't. I mean,
maybe a lot of things.
He was just pissed. And the axe came from inside the house. Like, the call came from in the house, man.
But also,
stage scene. I don't know.
What evidence do we have other than one pamphlet? Which, I don't know about you, but I'm a whore for a pamphlet. I'll pick up any fucking pamphlet there is and I'll read through it and I'll keep them if I'm like, oh, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know. And I know it's a different time and I am very aware of that and what's about to come out of my mouth. Mm-hmm. But I believe that couples counseling is a good thing for most couples at any stage. In fact, it's probably best preventatively before there's issues to have to resolve.
Yeah, I think couples counseling is a great thing. And that's why I'm like, I don't necessarily think that that's evidence that, like, he killed her. Or that it's evidence that there's an issue, because at least you're willing to work on it.
Right.
I think it's damned if it's like, nope, I refuse, you know, then that's a whole other issue. But, like, nobody said, like, yeah, Kathy had a black eye, or she said they were fighting a lot, or that Jim went, you know, he came into work shaking his head in a bad mood because they had just had a fight, or she hit him or something like that.
Right.
You know, it didn't seem like that, but the tea set gets me. Who just places it down? Unless you have respect for those items, which if they're yours, maybe you do.
Let me put it this. I don't believe that anything there was a robbery. I believe that absolutely was cover up for whoever did it. My thought is, who did it and why? Because if we talk about a lot of the charges in this country, you need to have the act and the intent.
Mm-hmm.
And for a man to be put away for 25 to life without true knowledge of that intent, that is reasonable enough for me.
But statistically,
it's him,
the, like, person most likely to, I mean, it's always the husband, but it's usually the husband.
You are so much more likely to be killed by the man that lives in your own home.
Correct.
Than any other man. And, like, that's not to say that you are not also equally more likely to be killed by the woman that lives in your own home than a different woman. That is also true. But it is one of those things that if we go by statistics and average, it's fucking Jim. But if we go by a case by case, I can't prove that it's fucking Jim.
I know.
This is a good one. It's mildly infuriating.
Thank you.
I'm very glad that I guess there was closure for all parties involved in some way or another.
I just feel for the families, because if Jim really did do it and Sarah fully believes that he is innocent, that it just gets me.
She
lost out on her mom. And if you grew up doting on loving and defending your mom's killer, no matter if that also ended up being your dad or not, but what an awful thing in that your mom's family has just been like, we're strangers to you. We weren't allowed to have a relationship with you. We think that the man who raised you also killed your mom. Why don't you see that? What an awful... It's just for everybody. Like, the grief on top of grief. It's just...
I feel for
a family destroyed.
So deeply in that sense. And especially in the relationships and what could have been being lost with Kathy's family. But... And I know this is very unicorns shitting rainbows. Fully understand.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it is Jim, I don't think she's ever going to believe that. And I say that for a few reasons. And the first is the people that are telling her that, like, we are your family. We love you so much. This man killed your mom. She doesn't know them. She doesn't know them. I mean, she might know of them. She might know them from the trial, but she didn't know them as people before.
Mm.
There was no before my mom got killed in her head.
Mm-hmm.
And after my mom got killed, my dad was there. And so I think it's one of those where I almost, even if it is him, I almost hope she never has to reconcile that. And I know that that's idealistic and she likely will. And that is grief in and of itself.
Yeah, but then that's 40 years of your life you spent loving, supporting, defending a man.
But if he found out he did, you're not going to not, that's not your dad. I mean, it enters a whole new level of complexity with your relationship and how you feel about him, but he still was the one there for 40 years.
Yeah, but you son of a bitch.
Yeah.
I know he's not your dad, but he's also not a killer, if that's the, you know, and then that's where do you draw the line?
Well, but that's an added layer.
Oh, I know, but
and for a girl who has, you know, I can't concretely say that she wouldn't disown or, you know, disconnect and cut him off if that was the case, if she got there. But I think about me and I think about cognitive dissonance, and that shit is hell of a drug. It would be really hard to cut off the one family member that you've known your whole life, who took care of you, who was present, who was there, who sat with you in the grief after all of this, and none of your other family members did, and you don't have a mom to go to about it. It would be really hard to cut that person out. And so I'm not saying that I hope she lives in ignorance or bliss if she needs the truth and she needs to find it and reconcile. And if that leads her to a path where she believes it's her dad, that sucks. But I get it. But I kind of hope she doesn't have to.
Oh, it just hurts.
I know.
It's just sad. I just think that there are so many victims in this that... And of course, it's almost like Kathy is lost in this because so much is going on surrounding her death. But she was a young woman who went to bed one night and didn't wake up.
Yep.
Who tucked her 3-year-old into bed, probably kissed her husband on the cheek. And then that was it. That didn't live to see the next day. And I think luckily they were able to confirm that she very much did die in her sleep.
Yeah, no suffering.
And that aside from the obvious, she appeared to be sleeping, and that it wasn't this frozen look of horror on her face that she woke up the second beforehand or saw it happen, that it just simply wasn't anymore. Right. But so much of it became about Jim, and you understand why.
Yeah, absolutely. But,
you know, Kathy's life was cut short. She wasn't even 30. And I think that's such a haunting, sad thing that she didn't get to see her daughter grow up. She didn't get to grow up herself.
She didn't get to get out of her 20s. And I fucking can't wait to get out of my 20s.
I'm going to hold on to them as long as I can because they're going by pretty quick.
They're going quick, but I feel like 30 is going to be a real thriving time.
There you go.
Yeah.
30, flirty, and thriving.
Where's Mark Ruffalo with my razzles?
Razzle red. Anyway. So I very much want to hear from our listeners. We will have some polls, at least in our Spotify. But if you don't listen on Spotify and you listen, like, I mean, most of you guys either are Spotify or Apple. So it's pretty fair to say it's one or the other. Email us.
Please.
I want to know what you think.
Comment
I definitely
on the Instagram.
On the Spotify polls, we'll always put a poll. Of course, we're going to ask if you think Jim did it. I want to know your feedback. We'll have some options there. And we love you guys. Thank you for hanging out with us and spending time in our little corner of the true crime world.
If you wanted to see all of the people, the places, the things we're talking about, also, if you don't listen on Spotify, if you're on any of the other platforms that we're on and you want to let us know your thoughts, please feel free to comment on this post on our Instagram. But you can find us at About Time for True Crime Pod with periods in between every word. So that is ABOUT period, TIME period, FOR period, TRUE period, CRIME period, POD, because podcast was too long. But If you, much like our name, wanted to send us something a little bit longer than Instagram might allow or like, or you would want to put out for everyone, you could email that to us. But Allie, where could they email?
If you wanted to send us an email about your thoughts on the case or the pod or a case recommendation or your pod pets, because we'd love to see them, you could email us at abouttime4tc@gmail.com. So that's ABOUTTIME, numeric 4TC at gmail.com.
We are so grateful for all of you in our ATFTC fam. It would not be the same without you. And we're giving you all little nose boops. Boop, boop, boop. But if I do look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye. What a fucking ride. Can I take my hands and feet out yet?
Yeah, you can do that.